714, hot and humid, maybe for the 4th of July weekend. Not looking so good for the Florida coast, that Emerald Coast all along looking like it might be kind of rainy and wet. I don't think tropical, but just rainy and wet, not so nice. But we'll keep you apprised of everything you need to know. Jeremy Alford joins us now, editor-publisher of La Politics Weekly. How you doing, Jeremy?
Hey, Tommy. Good morning.
You doing any 4th of July traveling or not?
No, we're gonna stick to home and keep it kind of quiet.
Yeah, that's what I do, too. I don't like the crowd, so I do my 4th of July traveling in October.
It's a good time for it.
It is. It is a good time for it because less people, of course, then it throws the whole thing over. I got to do my October traveling at a different time. Let's talk about the session before we get into some other things. Your thoughts on the recently concluded session and who won, who lost?
Seems like we all lost a little bit, Tommy, on that deal. Mm-hmm. We're kind of still waiting on major insurance reforms, but a budget was passed. At the last minute, the governor kind of threatened a special session to address a pharmacy benefit manager issue involving most notably CVS. And, since then, there's been some judgments and from the courts, and Jeff Landry was very happy about that. Donald Trump Jr. was very happy about that. So we're waiting to see if he's going to call that special session or not. It kind of ended with a whimper. There were no major tax proposals. It was kind of a strange session.
So let me ask you this for a second. When it comes to The Mylar balloon thing, and this is not going to affect anybody's life really or anything else. It's just the politics of it kind of raised my eyebrows because, as you well know, Jeremy, in Louisiana law, it amazed me how many legislators throughout the process told us, well, the governor has to sign it. And it's like, well, no, the governor doesn't have to sign it in Louisiana. He just has to actively veto it for it not to become a law. Do you know why he would veto that Mylar balloon bill? What is there a story behind that or not?
I mean, I certainly don't want to float any speculation on the balloon issue. Mm-hmm. We'd have to ask the governor that.
Okay. Did it seem odd to you?
Frankly, it's not one of the bills that I'm tracking. But
no, I was just wondering that he would proactively veto it. That's all I'm saying. I just don't understand.
Maybe the balloon industry has some folks on the payroll in Louisiana. I don't know.
Big Mylar. Never underestimate Big Mylar. Let's talk about this primary system that we're looking at now. How's that going to change things for the senatorial race, the U.S. Senate race?
Well, it's going to change things not only for the candidates, but also for voters. And Bill Cassidy, the incumbent in that U.S. Senate race, said himself that he thinks a lot of folks are probably going to show up to vote and not realize that we are returning to a closed primary system. And mm-hmm. on April 18th, what that means is if you're a Democrat, you're going to vote in the Democratic primary. If you're a Republican, you'll vote in the Republican primary. If you're an independent, you can choose which one you want. But it's going to be a very different style of voting. We went back to it briefly in 2008, Tommy, and voters were so confused that lawmakers ended up kind of reversing course almost immediately after that experiment. But we're in a different environment now, and it's a Republican-led state, and Republicans are really excited about this primary. But for Bill Cassidy, it means for the first time he's going to have to go in an election and fight for his incumbency based on only Republican votes. And we're starting to see kind of a crowded field there. And, when you're carving up that much of the vote amongst so many strong candidates, little things really start to matter, like messaging and tone and maybe even those independent votes.
So the difference is with an open primary, that would be what they call a jungle primary, and then it's like, mm-hmm. who? Correct? Stop me if I hurt myself. I don't do anything wrong.
No, that's correct. And, that's always been our system, the jungle primary system, where everybody goes on one ballot and the two top vote getters make it to the runoff as needed. Now we're going to be selecting a Republican and a Democratic candidate to go on that ballot. That primary vote is going to be April 18th. The regular kind of primary ballot for those congressional seats and for the Senate is going to be on November 3rd.
So how does that change your calculus for the Republican candidates that are challenging Bill Cassidy? Does it?
You know, in the past, we've seen Republicans maybe move a little closer to the center in order to kind of court Democratic votes. There's been a handful of Republicans who have been able to kind of do that successfully statewide. Billy Nungesser, our lieutenant governor, comes to mind. But in this primary, you're going to have Republican versus Republican and Democrat versus Democrat. Of course, the big actions on the Republican side were Bill Cassidy is the incumbent in that race already. State Senator Blake Miguez from New Iberia has announced. The state treasurer, John Fleming, has announced. And kind of the wild card, Tommy, is Congresswoman Julia Letlow. Mm-hmm. She's reportedly being courted by Jeff Landry and Donald Trump. And look, if there's one huge factor in this race, it's the guy who's not on the ballot, and that's Donald Trump. If he wants to come and get involved in this race, he's going to have a lot of sway.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. And along those lines, before we do take the break, Jeremy, Bill Cassidy is trying to, it seems like, trying to put himself back in the good graces, but I don't think that can happen with Donald Trump, can it?
He gets a shot today. It looks like the Senate's going to vote on the big, beautiful bill today. Yeah. And Bill Cassidy has kind of been quiet in terms of what he's going to do, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him staying with Donald Trump on that.
Okay, but if he does, I still don't know that that's going to help him. You know what I mean?
I don't know either.
Expediency, what I'm saying? I need you now. What have you done for me lately? I need you now, but my memory is long. We'll see what happens. 7:20 more. We come back. Traffic now, WWL. 7:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our friend Jeremy Alford, editor and publisher of La Politics Weekly. You can follow him on Twitter at LA Politics Now, and we're talking about the closed primary and the Senate race. Somebody texted in, Jeremy, this is an interesting question about could this force the Democrats to get their act together and surface some candidates who have a chance of being elected who otherwise would not have run because they would not have finished in the top two if it was an open primary. Thoughts?
Well, you know, if the party ever needed motivation, this would certainly be it. In concert with the last few years, you know, the most interesting name to pop up, Tommy, is John Bel Edwards, who was our last governor. Mm-hmm. And kind of the last Democrat to win a big statewide office in a splashy way. And, you know, I saw him just a week ago, and right now he's not saying no, but I'd be very surprised to see him jump in this race.
You would be surprised to see him jump in the race?
Yeah, I would. Okay. I think at the end of the day, Governor Edwards probably won't be too attracted to D.C. politics, and he's got a good job right now, working for a law firm in New Orleans, and he seems to be enjoying not being in elected life, so we have to wait and see what his final decision is.
Let's talk about Royce Duplessis. I know, you know, you can't talk to the mayor's race or anything, but what's his reputation in Baton Rouge, record as a legislator? How do his colleagues view him?
Yeah, that was a big announcement this weekend, right? First, we had a maybe yes from Royce Duplessis, then a concrete no, and then we learned that the no is not so concrete, and it looks like he's about to announce for mayor tomorrow. He is known as most certainly a voice on criminal justice reform issues. He's the kind of guy who will bring a bill every year just to have it debated, knowing that it probably won't pass. But he's also more recently kind of developed somewhat of a pragmatic profile at the Capitol, kind of opened himself up to working a little more closely with Jeff Landry as governor than maybe other than he has with other Republicans in the past. And that Tommy brings up a really interesting question in this race. And in that, you know, if that relationship, policy relationship is as strong with Governor Landry as it seems to be, how will that reflect on this race? Will Jeff Landry get involved either directly or indirectly? New Orleans is obviously, I don't know what we call it, a sore spot, Tommy, or a talking point for Jeff Landry. So he is, one way or the other, he's certainly interested in this race.
How is he viewed in Orleans Parish? Have we ever seen any polling numbers on that about the governor?
About Jeff Landry?
Yeah.
You know, I would say that's probably the toughest area of the state for him is New Orleans proper. I mean, you don't have to be a political scientist to know that far right Republicans are going to have a tough time there. And plus, you know, he has kept New Orleans in the crosshairs, whether it's through actions with state police, criticisms of the mayor or the crime issue.
So I guess my question is, would Royce DuPlessis' relationship with the governor hurt him or not necessarily in Orleans Parish?
You know, I would imagine that if the governor wants to get involved in this race, and if the governor wants to support a Democrat directly or indirectly, it's going to be done pretty quietly. I think that the governor knows that his chosen candidate would probably do better with the executive branch staying quiet.
Gotcha. Thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate your time as always. Jeremy Alford, editor, publisher of La Politics Weekly. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to council member Joe Geruso about the city council's travel ban that got knocked down as it relates to LaToya Cantrell, latest on the Wisner Trust, and more. And also, I'm going to follow up on something as it relates to Senator Bill Cassidy that I brought up and was told that, you know, he was going to write a letter about, and it seemed like people were saying this and that and the other thing about Biden and executive orders, but President Trump's been issuing a lot of executive orders, but not as it relates to this. I'll tell you when we come back right now. Time for WWL First News. 744, 16 till 8. Joe Geruso joins us now, our friend, New Orleans City Council member. How you doing, Joe?
I'm great. Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. So let's talk about this boil water advisory, New Orleans East, I think it was. I got the alert on my phone. Do you know anything about what caused that, or is it power? Was it pumping?
This one was actually uptown.
Uptown.
So yes, okay. there was a break in a 30-inch line on Lower Line Street, and of course, when you have a break of that magnitude and a pipe that big, and there's plenty of those really big pipes uptown, and you lose water pressure, which has happened here, there's almost certainly going to be some problems. So they sued the water board, lost enough water pressure there. You got to call the boil water advisory when it gets below a certain point. They did it for roughly more than 24 hours, I think. I mean, usually it's about 24 hours from the time it starts. And I know as of yesterday, there were maybe two or three blocks that still had boil water advisories in it. But look, the hard part about this one, Tommy, and I spoke with Sioux Water Board, and they acknowledged it this weekend, is that the break in the boil water advisory happened during a weekend. If it happens on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, people grumble because you got to deal with it at breakfast and probably dinner time, mm-hmm. but you kind of work around it and you're at work. When you're at home, you have plans and family's coming over, friends are coming to do things. It just makes it much more complicated. So they're working on repairing it. It should be pretty much done, I think, by today. And obviously continue to monitor all these things to see how we can try and mitigate them as much as possible.
I got my boil water advisories conflated because the one I'm looking at on my phone here goes to Saturday, and it says portions of the East Bank. Or maybe it was about, I didn't click on it, maybe it was about the uptown thing, the East Bank, not New Orleans East. I beg your pardon. Okay, now I got it straight, Joe. Either way, when it comes to preventing anything like this from happening, it just goes to the aging infrastructure and the city sinking, and I'm surprised stuff like this doesn't happen more often. Are you?
Yeah, in a way I am. Obviously, I think the water towers and some other things have made some differences. But I think when Ghassan was here very early on, I heard him say something like half of the pipes in the city, and I think water pipes, are 80 years or older. And that was about 5 or 6 years ago, so maybe even approaching 90 years at this point. Mm-hmm. It makes it really hard. And obviously, it's hot. The system gets stressed more during the summer. People are using water, as they should be. Mm-hmm. And I know Sewage and Water Board has really done a really good job of trying to valve off a number of different areas to prevent this from spreading more widely than it does. And it happened. And look, it's another just sign of, as you're pointing out, how old the system is and the fact that they're going to have to be in kind of in constant mode of upgrading those lines as they move forward.
So tell me what's going on with the mayor's travel ban.
Well, the judge in civil district court ruled apparently that we've impinged upon separations of power by ruling that the mayor can't travel. I don't understand how this rises to, you know, sort of a constitutional issue, number one. And number two, in this kind of like very pragmatically and practically, if the council were to fund the mayor traveling at a certain point, if we were just going to set a number, let's pick something like $10,000, does that mean the mayor can travel above that because that we can't tell the mayor what to do? I mean, we sort of, whether people like it or not, in quotes, tell the mayor what to do on a regular basis. We decide how much the funding should be for NOPD, for safety and permits, for lots of other departments. So it doesn't quite make sense, and it's just another one of those frustrating things that we have to deal with in the district court, where, candidly, we haven't found as much relief all the time as we thought we would, but we'll look at taking next steps and seeing what we're going to do. But this is one that's definitely a head-scratcher.
So that's for this, Mayor, but I'm just looking ahead, and I think maybe Mayor Cantrell charted some new territory. So along those lines, is there anything the council can do? I don't know if it's a change of the city charter for the next time a mayor would be willing to go into some uncharted territory.
Yeah, I think you'd have to look at more of a charter change just to absolutely be safe. I still think the council by ordinance could do one of two things. One is just set what the budget is going to be and go from there, or set terms, Tommy, about what travel looks like. I mean, I've said this many, many times. If you are traveling for a purpose, then the travel makes sense. Well, what is the purpose? What has New Orleans gained as a result of that? So don't let it lose sight of that. And I think you could also set sort of a cap on the amount of money to be spent per year by the city. But obviously now that we have this ruling, we have to work through all those issues.
So I'm just curious about the level of checking out that the mayor has done. Do you all hear from the mayor regularly, or who's running the city? Is it her or her staff? Has she delegated all of this? What's going on? Do you know?
Well, look, the bottom line, I don't think this is any real shock, is we tend to deal more with the mayor's subordinates than the mayor herself. So from my perspective, it hasn't really been that much of a change, because if we need something, we go to department heads or other people. But it has not been what you would expect in terms of regular communication. And my view has been, I can grouse about having the problem, or I can work trying to do around whatever the thing may be. And the bottom line is, to me, it matters less about who I'm communicating with as long as the thing is getting handled.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up and come back with Joe Geruso. We'll talk about the Wisner Trust when we come back. I'll talk also about the school board. It is 7:50, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:55, 5 till 8, Joe Geruso, our guest. I'm Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about the mayor's travel ban and this district court. And I'm just trying to understand, Joe, what the council can control and what they can. I'm looking at this contract for Charles Rice, the former head of Entergy, as it relates to the Emperor's contract. What can a council do? What can you do? Does this really have anything to do with anything?
I mean, it's been a strange odyssey, because I don't understand the court's rulings on any of these issues, in the sense that the council is very clearly, by charter and otherwise, the appropriating entity. And what a lot of the courts seem to be saying is, we understand that your power is to appropriate, but if you don't agree with the mayor, it's not really your power. Well, then it seems like the mayor, you know, gets to tell us what to do, and we have to appropriate no matter what. That just does not make sense.
Let me take it back a second, because the way this process works, the mayor submits a budget, the council has hearings, and then you decide what to approve, right?
Correct. That's right. That's exactly right. And Tommy, as we tell people all the time, it's not dipped in amber. Mm-hmm. I mean, we change the budget nearly every single meeting. We allocate grant funds. We change general fund proceedings. We make changes almost every other week. They're not big changes usually, but we make changes. Mm-hmm. And so I think the council is sort of sensitive to the fact that, look, under this charter, the mayor is extraordinarily powerful and controls departments and boards and commissions and really is the epicenter of the New Orleans power structure. But the one major check on that is that the council controls the budget. And so when there's an impingement on our ability to budget and allocate is generally when the council is going to get frustrated with whomever is challenging that.
So what's happening with the school board and the money that the city was skimming off of the collection of the taxes? I don't understand where that is either.
So the city apparently, let me take a step back. The case was supposed to go to trial about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then I think literally as the case was being called for trial, the city said, no, there's a necessary and indispensable party in the assessor who needs to be here because the assessor is involved at some point with sending the bill out and sort of what's been withheld. And so since the assessor exercises a function as part of this, the assessor needs to be part of the suit. And then since that happened, I feel like there have been murmurs about trying to get back to a settlement, but that hasn't materialized yet. And look, I don't understand the point of trying to try this case because, you know, at the best part of it, you're going to have a large judgment with a bunch of interest against the city, which could equal or eclipse what the settlement is, or you can have a judgment that's greater than what the settlement is, neither of which is a good situation for the city. And so I the other hard part too, Tommy, and I think this is like just a candid assessment, a lot of people are sort of asking the question of this. There's 196 days before the terms of this council and this mayor are up. Is this something that's worth fighting right now for, or do you say we're going to wait 200 days and we'll try and bring it up with the next mayor? So I'm sure that the school board has not filled me in on their decision making, but I think the idea of what happens with the next mayor is looming large in people's strategic decision making.
So is there a bucket of $10 million sitting somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, the money is there. I mean, we've allocated the money. It just hasn't been sent over to the school board yet.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member. Confused? You betcha. Me too, but that's the way things work. We come back, we'll talk to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, about the Archdiocese and their bankruptcy case. And we'll talk to DA Jason Williams about the apprehension of Antonio Massey.